Remaker's Mark, Episode 64, Big Trouble in Little China. Hello again, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our 64th episode, part two, in fact, where we are continuing to discuss Big Trouble in Little China. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, speaking of a couple things that were mentioned in the movie, there, how was that for a segue? Magic potion or six demon bag?
Your smoothest segue yet.
Thank you.
I am well, and always magic potion.
Nice. You're such a wizard at heart. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jeremy Nielsen, how are you? And how about you? Magic potion or six demon bag?
I am doing lovely, and I always go with the unknown, so six demon bag.
I like it.
Or bag, depending on what part of the country you're in.
Big or bag?
Big.
Get a bag of bagels?
That's one of the things that my brother-in-law from North Carolina consistently makes fun of my sister and my family for.
Yeah. I just call it a sack.
Six demon bag.
Bag. That's really weird. The White Tiger, how are you tonight, and what about you? Magic potion or six demon bag?
I'm great, and magic potion, because I don't know what the other one is.
Mm. All the more exciting.
But yep. You don't necessarily know what the magic potion is either.
Yeah, that's true.
Fair enough.
It's really just like a suicide at the movie theater, right? You know, we just look at every pop, you just chug it, and you assume something magical happens.
Yeah. We're going to do a lightning round after this, inspired by that, Andy. So just get ready for that.
Boy.
Okay. Mark Josting, how are you? And magic potion or six demon bag?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. And I got to go six demon bag because who doesn't love surprises? I mean, you never know what you're going to get. You reach in, pull one out, see what's chomping on your hand. It'd be a hit at parties where you want to murder everyone.
It's like if Quentin Tarantino directed Aladdin.
Yes.
No, thank you, but yes. Yes. All of the above. My name is Kyle. I will be your host once again this fine evening. And I got to go six demon bag. I mean, you got to figure that at least one of those will be incredibly interesting. You know, it could be world ending. It could be terrible. Could be kind of like Cabin in the Woodsy. Who knows? But you know, from an entertainment perspective, I really think you can't beat it. Now, the lightning round, inspired by Andy's question of movie theater soda adventures. Let's pretend that we are in. Let's pretend we are in a movie theater that has one of those make your own Coke dispensers, you know, where you can kind of like do, you know, you can do strawberry Fanta, you can do, you know, or grape Coke, whatever. Okay, going quickly down the road, what is your pick when you have infinite selections in the movie theater like that? Andy, go.
Vanilla strawberry.
Jer, go.
Mellow yellow with grape.
Ooh, nice. Lee, go.
Cherry with 7-Up.
Ooh, nice. Ooh, Mark, nice. Go.
Always Dreamsicle, orange and vanilla Coke.
Nice.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Oh, we got a winner.
Nice. That's a really good one. We'll usually do grape Sprite. That's usually because we don't want to get like crazy caffeinated, and those things, like even the small is like 197 ounces. They're gigundous. So, yeah. Nice. Yeah, I got to go Dreamsicle, man.
The small is a Toyota Prius gas tank.
Yeah, pretty much. That's funny. They got a good rate on them. Jer, this was your pick. So you once again get to give us a recommendation. What are you recommendationing us for us?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. My recommendation this week is inspired somewhat by the fact that we are approaching and in the midst of the holiday season, and family, at least in my case, is spread out in a very large geographic area, so we don't always get a chance to see each other every holiday. And for Thanksgiving this year, we were supposed to get together, but because of some COVID-related unfortunates, we did not, but we did get to spend some time enjoying each other's company with the help of an online game playing system called Jackbox Games. And I'd like to recommend Jackbox Games for those of you that want to get together, have some fun, have some laughs with each other, and play some games, but you aren't in the same room with each other. They have a pretty decent catalog of games. They're all going to be kind of trivia or games centered around some of the classic concepts like Pictionary or Balderdash or trivia games or things like that. Punch in your answer, try to fool everybody, that sort of thing. They're great. The graphics are silly. The whole thing is silly. And it's just a reason to hang out in a Skype room with each other and yuck it up for a little while. So Jackbox Games is the designer, the maker, jackboxgames.com. And they have, like I said, a pretty robust games catalog for your online gaming social needs.
Now, do they facilitate voice chat as well, such that you would need something like Skype in addition?
I am not aware of that. What we have always done is my sister, who has the account because she uses it in her classroom quite a bit, so she has a lot more things unlocked. And so she will share her screen with us, and then everybody else just downloads the Jack goes onto their phone. They don't have to download anything. You go onto the whatever the URL is on your phone. So you're playing on your phone, and then we're using sort of the shared screen for the main game plus our Skype video chat.
Okay. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But to answer your question, there isn't an in-game chat system, but there isn't one needed to play the game, but it's helpful to have some sort of shared screen of some kind.
Towards the tail end of when Apple was working from home and we were just like doing anything to get content to fill days, we had a couple Jackbox party game hours, and that was really, really fun. I enjoyed that. I think if my internet history is remembering correct, for those of you who were internet nerds in the 90s and maybe early 2000s, there was a great game called You Don't Know Jack. And I think this is sort of the evolution of that.
I believe it sprang from the same company. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yep. Makes sense, at least. So, yeah. I always love that game. So, makes good sense.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah. If you're not going to be able to make it home for Christmas or New Year's or whatever, then give that a try.
I think it's pretty good for kids, too. Like, there's, you know, I think there's probably more suggestive ones, but overall, I think it's, you know, friendly for teen gatherings, if you will, or what have you. So yeah,
I don't know if there's a filter or something that you could adjust for that, but I mean, the one we played, which was kind of the balderdashy, come up with the fact, and if you fool people you get points, and if you guess the right answer you get points kind of idea, and some of them were a little weird and not necessarily dirty but suggestive. But I don't know. There might be a way to kind of turn that off, too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Good pick. We will link that in the show notes, but I like that a lot. Good choice. All right. So, Jer, since this was your choice, I am up next, so I get to pick the next movie, which I am very excited about. I didn't know where the timing of this episode was going to land. I had an idea for this that I was very excited about, and I really hope the timing worked. And it didn't quite work as perfectly as I hoped it would. But I'm still pretty happy about it. The movie that I am picking to watch next is the 1984 David Lynch film Dune.
We have to watch that one to
Jodorowsky's Dune, the documentary. What was it? Oh, What's Up, Doc? That we did. So you know, this was mentioned there. And then recently they had the Denis Villeneuve Dune. So I'm hoping we can find a way to watch that if we hadn't. So we can kind of do a third episode review of it, because it is something else. If not, no worries. But I thought that would be really fun. So this movie is a trip. It is.
Isn't it like 9 hours long?
No, it's not too bad. It's like 2:30 or something. Okay. It's not ridiculous.
Okay.
It does have my favorite title card of any movie ever, which is in giant, like almost kind of beveled Roman font, "Songs by Toto." So just to get you excited, as if, you know, you didn't need to be already with David Lynch and everything. But yeah, Toto does some of the music, and it's pretty great.
And by trip, you mean turd, right?
we'll get into it. I enjoy this movie probably more than I should.
It's an enjoyable movie. I have a feeling I'm not going to.
if you're able to enjoy it. That's my John Maddenism of the day. Maybe a little Harry Carey in there. I don't know. But
is this the first movie that we have done on this podcast that actually has already had a remake?
Oh, I maybe? Can't. No, I don't think so.
I don't know. That's a good question. We'll have to look into that.
Because when we did the Ghostbusters episode, the new Ghostbusters hadn't been done. And that wasn't really a remake.
Yeah, the whatchamadinger, Rebel Wilson and Anne Hathaway, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels remake right. didn't happen yet.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
A thought to consider.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm super excited. I think it'll be really fun. I just love David Lynch. I love what he brings to cinema. This is not one of his favorite films, and I don't think it is the favorite of many of his fans, but whatever. I'm still down. It's got big worms.
Hasn't he tried to like actively have his name removed from it?
No, not really. He just doesn't really talk about it. Like, it's not, he doesn't love it, but he's not really the kind of, like, you know, deny my history kind of guy. He's too weird for that.
I think Hodorowski enjoyed it.
It's not as bad as Damon Lindelof offering his fans to come and punch him or yell at him at cons for Prometheus.
Yes. No. I enjoyed that movie. Oh, boy. All right, so that is my pick. I'm excited about that. We will be getting into that very shortly here. Now, let us focus our attention again on Big Trouble in Little China. Before we get into our discussion of the film, let's do a recap of the recasting here for the major characters. They were kind of all major characters. We had one that was more major than the others, but the first five were, you know, major-ish characters. For the role of Eddie, originally played by Donald Lee, we went with Jer's choice of Randall Park.
Yay.
Good job. Yay. For the role of Egg Shen, originally played by Victor Wong, we went with Mark's choice of Chow Yun-Fat, which I can't wait for the makeup on that alone. For the role of Gracie Law, originally played by Kim Cattrall, we went with Lee's choice of Samara Weaving. I love that. I'm really into her. She's awesome. For the role of Wang Chi, originally played by Dennis Dunn, we went with Andy's choice of John Cho. I like that.
Yay.
For the role of Lo Pan, originally played by James Hong, we went with Mark's inspired choice of Lucy Liu. I think that is so cool. I was so excited for that. And then finally, the big one of all of them, Jack Burton, originally played by Kurt Russell. In a tiebreaker, we went with Andy's choice of Dax Shepard, which I think is really, really good. I'm really excited for that. I think that's a great pick. Well done. Jer, it sounds like you have some social media feedback.
I have a little bit, yes. I knew that my friend group would be interested in this episode. I wasn't completely prepared for the backlash of how dare yous and leave Jack Burton alone, but I did get a lot of that. But after egging some people on, I did get some responses, and they are thus. Jonathan Lee's first response was the cast of Community. And then he said, I'm going to think about this more and give you a real answer tomorrow. And his real answer the next day is high concept, gritty reboot directed by Guillermo del Toro with Joaquin Phoenix as Jack Burton.
Whoa, that's interesting. That is high concept.
Yep.
I don't know if I love it, but I'm intrigued.
I prefer the cast of Community.
Then we've got Brent Godowski said Don Cheadle. Which is interesting. I like Don Cheadle. We don't talk about him very much on this
podcast.
That's
true.
We need to cast him more. Let's see. There was a leave it alone. Don't touch it. It's perfect. and tread carefully. And finally, Heather Wirtz said, and I think that she was just listing off people that would play Jack Burton and not a full cast here, but she said Jason Sudeikis, Joel McHale, Chris O'Dowd, or Bill Hader.
Interesting.
Wow.
A lot of different energies there. I actually really like Bill Hader. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I like pretty much that full list. And that those are all very interesting and, yes, very different.
I kind of want to see a British Big Trouble in Little China. That would be pretty interesting.
You can combine it with Arrested Development and have it Big Trouble in Little Britain.
Yes. Well, thank you to all who provided audience feedback. That's awesome. So let us now dig into, in part two here, what we liked about the movie, what we didn't like about the movie, what we would change, some performances, all that kind of fun stuff. Where we are starting here is what I think is the overarching thing of the movie, which is just kind of the vibe of this movie. It is just so interesting, so unique. We've talked about how there's a lot of things in the melting pot that is this movie. Jared, you want to kind of touch on what that felt like for you?
Man, I could talk about this and have talked about this movie for a very long time. So if I just need to shut up, just tell me to shut up, I guess. But I love how this movie feels. It feels like that early 80s, just barely on the rails kind of movie. You've got John Carpenter, who's putting together that kind of movie pretty consistently at this point, and working in these constraints of budget and time and everything else. So he's throwing out every little director camera trick and every practical effect he can to great success, I think. And it's a story that barely makes sense, and it's a cast that shouldn't quite work, and it's all of it just feels like it's barely being held together, and somehow through magic and love it does. And I just you don't see movies like this anymore, because studios aren't gonna green light this project anymore unless there's an A+ blockbuster hero involved. And then if they're involved, they're gonna say, well, I need to be able to do this and this. They're not gonna look dopey like Jack Burton does. And so, like, all of it just really got pulled together in a way that was so unique to the time and place, but it doesn't feel like a time and place kind of movie. It feels sort of timeless. Mark, how about you? You got some thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'd agree that it does have kind of like a timeless feel, that the modern culture in this movie could be contemporary modern culture, and it wouldn't change the story a lot, if at all. And one of the things that interested me was where this movie sits, like in the development of genres in film. I meant to do some actual research on this, but did not. But so I'd like to see what you guys think about how wrong I might be. But it seems to me like before the mid 80s, there was very little of fantasy in modern culture. Sort of movies, and I think there have been a lot since then. But if there's anything fantasy before mid 80s, it was probably like high fantasy and just straight up fantasy. But this is a really good, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but a juxtaposition of that sort of ancient lore, magic, mysticism in the modern culture. I think this one does it really well, and I don't know if there are any other American movies that try to dabble in Asian lore. What do you guys think? Like, is this kind of on the forefront of a wave of genre films?
I think the genre that you were looking for maybe would be called contemporary fantasy. I don't know. To answer your last point, though, interesting fact about this movie is that it was in a race to get released with Golden Child.
Okay, yeah.
The studios panicked about getting it out in time because they were worried that if it came out after Golden Child, it would just be, oh, this is just trying to be Golden Child, and it would flop. And so they condensed everything down to make sure that it got released several months before the Golden Child. But beyond those two, I don't know that there's a lot of sort of this same kind of movie. I think there are some, and I think that mid-80s tried to dabble in a lot of this sort of sci-fi / fantasy, but in a contemporary setting kind of idea. But I think you're right. I think that this was sort of this was Hollywood trying something new.
Yeah. I think like Disney did fantastical things, like, you know, the Chitty Chitty Bang Bangs and Pete's Dragon. Like there've been movies that had fantastical elements, but not like fantasy per se. You know what I mean? I think there were some live action animation kind of mixes that were interesting in that way, but I wouldn't call them fantasy by any means, you know, but before the 80s. But yeah.
Yeah, things like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and things like that, there's magic elements in it.
Yep. Mary Poppins.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone's ever called that a fantasy film. But yeah, magical for sure.
Kids. Yes. Magical. Yeah, maybe that's a good way to put it. So magical instead of fantasy. Yeah.
And then I think before this, you had things like Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
And even Willow came out pretty close to this. So you had sort of, like you were saying, the sort of high fantasy swords and magic kind of epics.
Yeah. And like the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings animated films were
right
somewhere yep. in a few years before this.
Yeah, they were. They've been trying to make that a working genre forever, but this is something outside of that, I think.
I think there's one that we're not remembering here, and I'm a little ashamed of Lee for not remembering this, especially. But I think we're ignoring Hercules in New York. I feel like that is a, you know, that is right in that the crosshairs of fantasy and modern day. So you know, I don't know how we did that, but here we are.
Well, and also The Last Dragon.
Also, The Last Dragon, yes. Yeah. What year was Last Dragon? I don't remember.
85?
Okay, so real close. Yeah. funny. I couldn't resist. I could barely get that out.
Hercules, where Arnold Schwarzenegger is completely dubbed throughout the whole movie. Because yes. Nobody could understand what he was saying.
Yep. Yep. Good old Arnie.
Yep. And overdubbed by a guy from the 1940s.
Listen here, see?
I'm Hercules.
I really enjoyed kind of talking about the vibe of the movie. I really like the way that they started it out with the interview with Egg Shen. I thought that was really cool. Like, they did a good job of establishing the stakes. They did a good job of basically establishing characters. Like, they already made Jack Burton kind of like a mythic character before you even see him and get a chance to judge him as his, you know, dorky terribleness. But it was so great. And it establishes magic as a reality in this current world. I just thought that was so cool. It could have been so cheesy. And I think at its heart, it probably was kind of cheesy, but I just loved it so much. I just thought that was such a brilliant way to start the movie. I just adored it.
If I remember right, that was a late add-on that the studio requested.
Cool.
Because they wanted something or another. But it was another way that John Carpenter really sort of got what he wanted while also giving the studio what they wanted. Like, they, yes, make Jack Burton feel like the hero, make him even more of a mythical presence, while in the movie he's really not at all.
Yeah.
And it just is another... It's another way that he subverted the expectations of everybody and just like pulled the wool over the eyes of the studio. I love that.
I think it might have been nice if we came back to the detectives, but I mean, I don't know if the movie really needed that, but it'd be kind of nice to button that up.
Yeah, I think it could have, but I don't feel like it's lacking because of it. I think it's a very forgettable opening, other than the fact that it's perfect, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, it does its job perfectly and then just completely forgets about it, which I think is fine. I'm not too terribly worried about it. But, you know, could have been an interesting loop back. Maybe they were setting up a sequel. I don't know. I can't believe there hasn't been a sequel to this. Now that I say that out loud, that's really weird.
Anthony Birch, who many of you would know as the Dungeon Master to the podcast Dungeons and Daddies, co-wrote a graphic novel series called Old Man Jack that is essentially a sequel to this.
No way.
Yep.
That's cool. I had no idea.
It's 100% cool. It's an awesome, awesome story too. I've paged through it a little bit. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but it's him living in Florida, basically retired and having to quote unquote come out of retirement to save the world.
That's so good. Anthony Birch is amazing. He's so good at what he does.
Yeah.
Man,
he's fantastic.
Yeah. Incredible. I'll have to check that out. Let's link that in the show notes so we can maybe get a library request for that or something. That would be good. Mark, you also mentioned something in particular from this movie that had like a huge impact on your childhood brain. What was that?
Yeah. Speaking of awesome and amazing, could we talk about the three storms? Thunder, lightning, and rain. The kind of henchmen of Lopan. I guess I'd like your opinions on this because I saw this movie as a kid, and as a kid, it was probably easier to impress me. But I think those characters are so awesome. They, you know, they all have their different superpowers, and you know, they make a great team together. They're so imposing. Yeah, they walk out into a battlefield and just own it. Fantastic. So those of you who didn't see this until adulthood, how wrong am I?
I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah, I loved them. I was totally obsessed with them.
What I think is so cool is that the first time you see them and they come out in that fight, they don't really do anything super spectacular besides the one guy riding down on a lightning bolt. But all they do is just sort of stand there and pull out their weird weapons. And the way that you know that they're badass is because everyone's terrified of them from both sides. And they mm-hmm. don't even have to do anything. And then later we get to see them kind of in their full powers and stuff. And then it's like, okay, these are the main bad guy. These are the mini bosses.
Yeah. I could see that being 100% lifted from a Kung Fu movie, you know, like a Japanese Kung Fu movie or whatever, and just set right there and it's fine. You know what I mean? It just fits perfectly with the vibe of the movie and those characters. So yeah, I could see that being like a glorious ripoff, if you will, of other better Kung Fu movies.
Yeah. Kung Fu is Chinese, by the way.
Thank you. Sorry. Appreciate it. That's a nice segue, actually, into Jer, you mentioned that it's kind of nice to not feel bad about liking a movie from the 80s. That's a refreshing change. Say more about that.
Yeah, we've done quite a few movies on this podcast that are 70s, 80s centric movies. And oftentimes the conversation topic comes up of either how women are presented in the movie or how minorities and other groups are presented in movies. The 80s didn't do a good job at any of those for the most part. I thought that upon rewatching this, I thought that this movie does a reasonably good job at portraying a culture other than Caucasian and the characters within that in a pretty reasonable and honoring way. I could be wrong. And I would welcome being told I'm wrong so that I could understand better. But I felt like that this movie was that John Carpenter really wanted to focus on the characters that weren't the white people. And if Gracie Law and Jack Burton were there, they were going to be sort of the dopey sidekicks and everybody else was going to get the center stage. That's just kind of how it appeared to me. I don't know. What do you guys agree, disagree? I'm perfectly willing to be told that I'm off base on this.
I totally agree. I think this film is mostly set in that Chinese culture, and Jack especially is the fish out of water. Gracie feels a little bit more natural because she seems to actually know things about that culture. But yeah, it seems really more like observational about Little China and the Chinese mysticism. I don't think it tries to put anything onto it. It tells us what's there and doesn't get judgy or anything.
Yeah, it wasn't ever a punchline. None of the characters were ever really a punchline. It felt like it inhabited a world that exists.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in the next part here where we're discussing Jack specifically. But I remember in part one, someone mentioned that there are so many opportunities for winks in this movie of like, haha, self-referential, but it never does that. And I think if they did that with the mystical pieces, it would have felt significantly less authentic, less genuine, and therefore less exciting and less interesting. So I'm so glad that they didn't do that at all. It just was true. Like they, again, that starting of the movie just set it up as though this was the most normal thing in the world, that this gentleman is being interviewed talking about green, like, what was it? Green flames or a green bubble or whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, he does lightning bolts between his hands. Like it just felt like, oh, okay, I guess it's Thursday. It's lightning bolt between the hands day. You know, I mean, it just felt like the most normal thing other than the fact that it was completely extraordinary, which I thought was awesome.
Pretty refreshing 180 from The Last Dragon, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Yes. You're here. So let's move on to talk about Jack, right? So he's the goofy elephant in the room. Jer, you had a long point on this. Surprise, surprise. Why don't you get us started on the discussion of Jack and what he means to you, what he means to the movie, how you felt it was, et cetera, et cetera.
So one of the reasons why I love this movie that I didn't realize watching it as a kid, but looking back on it now, is actually a reason why I loved it, is that Jack is just a, he's bad at his job. I mean, well, he thinks he's the hero of this movie, and in reality, he is not. He thinks that this story is his story, and it is not. And there are so many different ways that that could be played in a movie, and I think the way that John Carpenter and
Kurt Russell,
Kurt Russell, oh my gosh, the way that Kurt Russell played it is so perfect, because he's bringing in this bizarre John Wayne impression, and he's just super, like, everything about him is super macho, almost over the top, but not quite. And it's all very like, I got things under control. Everybody, nobody has to panic because I'm here. But he has no idea what he's doing. And that is shown not just from, like, the movie showing us that he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know that there's a safety on a gun. He shoots the thing and the stuff falls on his head and he knocks himself unconscious. Like, it shows him failing, but it also... Every other scene is him like, hey, don't worry, I got it under control. Will somebody please tell me what's happening? I don't know what's happening. Like, he just, most of his dialogue is saying, huh, what? And I love that hero was so anti-80s for action movies. And even now, like, you have movies like the Fast and Furious franchise and some of these other ones where you hear stories about, like, The Rock or Vin Diesel or these guys writing into their contract that they can't bleed or they have to punch the bad guy more times than they get punched, or all of this just ridiculous stuff that it's like, that would ruin this movie. And Jack Burton is just such an interesting, dumb character. And I love him so much because of the performance that Kurt Russell decided to do with it. And it's just, it's hilarious without being winky. It's swaggery without being, too over the top. And it's just, it's dumb without being silly.
I love the fact that partway through the movie, eventually he and Gracie, make out because, they're going to, it's an intense time and place and, emotions are running high. And For the rest of the movie, he's got, like, lipstick just smeared all over his face, which I think is perfect. Like, he doesn't know it. The audience knows it, and it is made so much better because of that. Like, it's not that lipstick is inherently emasculating, but I think it meant to do that in a way that was absolutely spot on perfect. You know what I mean? It just drove home everything that came before it in terms of him, being kind of bumbling, not really knowing what's going on, just like, and owning every second of that. I just love that moment so much. It made me so happy.
It's very humanizing.
Yeah, totally. When we were talking about the recasting of it, we talked about, what exactly is this performance? And I think we essentially landed on the fact that Jack Burton is completely lifting John Wayne, which we have talked about John Wayne movies here. He is an iconic character, an iconic actor. He is masculinity for so many people who grew up watching Westerns. I am not that person, and I sort of have, as a result of the larger world around us, quite a adverse reaction to masculinity in a lot of ways. So I wanted to hate this character so much just because it was impersonating, ripping off, lifting, whatever, John Wayne. But in spite of all of that, I couldn't hate the character. You know what I mean? Like, it had everything stacked against it in terms of what the character could have been like the terrible monologue in the truck that was also awesome, and just all, just like everything. It should have been awful, and I should have hated this character, but I never could. He's such a brilliant dumbass, which I think is the perfect encapsulation of Jack Burton. He's a brilliant dumbass.
Yes.
Well, and I think another thing with the John Wayne is that when this script first was getting passed around, and I think even when John Carpenter first got it, this was supposed to take place in the Old West.
Oh.
Like the early days of San Francisco and the Gold Rush and that time period. And so it was essentially a Western. And it was apparently awful and unmakeable. But through all of this, script revising processes and things, they got to what it is now. But I think that in a way they wanted to keep some of that sort of Western vibe, kind of similar to how sort of the show Firefly is a Western in space, and this is sort of a Western in this sort of cosmological stand, you know, the mysticism sort of way. Cosmological is not the right word, if it is even a word.
It is
even
a word.
To the point that Jack Burton, instead of a cowboy hat, he's always got the trucker hat that he's kind of, you know, putting on like a cowboy hat. He walks out at the end of the movie with saddlebags for some reason that don't make any sense at all. They tried to make this Western sensibility to it, and I think that's one of the John Wayne impression just works because of that, and you don't even realize it.
We touched on this a little bit in part one, but Jer, if you want to kind of bring home the idea that Jack Burton is 100% supposed to be the hero of this movie and 100% does not end up being so. And you called it a two-sided coin trick, which I love. So tell us a little bit more about that.
In order to get this movie made, the producer, the director, they had to convince whoever the studio was, I don't remember, but they had to convince them that they have a big name and it's going to be an action movie with an action star. But that's not the movie that's not the script that they had, and that's not the movie that John Carpenter wanted to make. He wanted to make a movie that we saw with Asian culture being at the forefront and this Asian mysticism and the heroes within all of that. And so he had to sort of create this balancing act of making a movie that could be shown to producers and studios to say, look, isn't Jack Burton awesome? Doesn't he kick so much ass? And he's just such a great hero, but then also just undermine him at every possible moment to continue to shine the light where it was supposed to be shown. And he pulls it off really, really well. And unfortunately, I think a side effect of that is when this movie came out, nobody liked it. It didn't do all that well until the VHS period of time, and then it was kind of one of those VHS darlings that has risen into kind of cult status since then. But I think that it's a really interesting, unique movie because of that aspect of it.
Plus, it made a that much more interesting character, the main character, you know. And they kind of let the cat out of the bag early on in the movie in terms of who they are going to visit or who they're trying to get from the airport. And then it just essentially becomes Wang Chi's movie, which is awesome because he kicks total ass. Like, he's an interesting character. Like, he's developed, you know, it's not, you know,
he's an action
lacking.
Hero.
Yes. Yep.
He's an 80s action hero. He does martial arts. He beats everybody that gets in, you know, that he faces. He fought the, you know, the main storm at the end. Like, this is his movie, but nobody realized it. Andy and Lee, do you guys have anything to say? You've been kind of backstaged by my jabbering.
I don't really have anything to add at this point.
I have chosen to keep my mouth shut because I have mostly disagreed with just about everything you guys have said.
I love it.
Same here.
Lee and I will have a spin-off episode of this one.
This wasn't for me.
So before we get into other performances, then let's touch on that. Andy, where is the source of your umbrage?
It's not even umbrage. It's just I didn't think this movie was that good. I apparently had never seen it in its entirety until now. And I don't know. This hit me similarly to Romancing the Stone in that I didn't like that one at all either. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to just go off on a Dennis Miller rant here. So suffice it to say,
Please do.
Well, okay then.
Those liberals in the media, I tell you what.
I thought the character of Jack Burton was completely unnecessary. And I actually kind of cringed and despised every time he was on the screen. I didn't find him endearing. I did find him completely bumbling and ineffective. I agreed with those perspectives, but I just thought he was in the way and confusing. I didn't think that his performance as the kind of the I can't forget your term, Kyle, something dumbass, but
brilliant dumbass.
The brilliant dumbass. I didn't find it. I just found him as a dumbass, and I don't know if that's Kurt Russell's fault or John Carpenter's fault or what. It felt very wooden and forced, and I didn't like that. And yeah, I don't know. I did the special effects to me were super hokey. I thought that when this movie was made at a time when I thought that the effects could have been better. So it made me wonder, like, was this a super low budget film and they were trying to do things with, this movie just really just kind of missed the mark with me.
I feel like I would have maybe responded to this better if I had seen it as a kid.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. And seeing it as an adult, I just didn't respond to it. So, yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of movies, similar genre movies from a similar time that were just a lot better.
Agreed.
A good friend of mine that I thought was going to jump at the chance to talk about this movie, whose name is Joe, said almost verbatim what you said. He's like, I didn't care for it. And everybody's like, how could you say that? What are you talking about? And he's like, I didn't see it until like 5 years ago. I didn't care for it.
Yeah, I have a feeling there's a lot of movies like that I love because I saw them as kids, and I know that, you know, people that see them as adults are like, meh.
I feel like if I hadn't seen The Golden Child when I was a kid and I saw it now, I don't think I would like it. But it just so happens that I have a lot of nostalgic connection to that movie. So, and it's similar to this one.
That's a great comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so curious about how much my reaction to this movie and The Golden Child as well, you know, are because I saw them when I was young. I'd really love to know what my reaction would be if I was just coming to these fresh and blank, when I know for sure that I'm the kind of person that would appreciate a movie like this.
And I want to be clear, there are elements of this film that I really, really enjoyed. If this movie was strictly about Chinatown and the goings on within it, I probably would have liked it more if any of the white characters were taken out of it. If all of them were taken out of it and this was simply a movie about the criminal and mystical and magical underworld of Chinatown, I probably would have liked it more. To me, it just seemed like the white characters were just kind of superfluous and in the way. And I hear what you're saying, Jer, about John Carpenter kind of pulling this trick to get the movie made. And that certainly, I don't know the history of that movie, but it makes sense kind of given the time that to showcase this story, he had to kind of whitewash it, for lack of a better term. And if that's true, then good on you, John Carpenter, for pulling that fast one. Because it did give us this movie that obviously a lot of people have enjoyed. For me, I wish it would have been different. And maybe in that time and in that movie, in the Hollywood of that day, that probably would not have been possible.
I would like to know, if we took Jack out of this film, well, where do we think the comedy is going to come from?
Well, personally, I didn't think he provided any comedy, so I wouldn't. it wouldn't be missing for me. I think it could come from better writing. I think that you can still have a buffoonish character. I mean, I think we talked about this before. Think of like a Shanghai Nights or Shanghai Noon or the Rush Hour films, that you have that kind of buddy comedy with Jackie Chan, where your Owen Wilsons or your, I'm forgetting that other actor's name.
Chris Tucker.
Thank you, Chris Tucker. That they're a little buffoonish in what they do, but they're definitely there for the comedy. And then you let the martial arts stars do the martial arts stuff. Like, that formula worked really, really well. Now, granted, you also had Jackie Chan, but I feel like something similar could be done in this story. But to me, the Jack Burton that we had in the movie, to me, it was just kind of, he just kind of had he was as interesting to me as the potato that Jer was eating when we started this call.
Mm-hmm. I think the comedy would lie. One of my favorite scenes is when Wang Chi is fighting the guy that eventually blows up. Is he a storm or is he just a goon? He's a sidekick.
He is a storm.
He's a storm.
He is a storm. Okay.
He's thunder.
Got it. Okay. So when he's fighting thunder, And they're like, the camera is essentially facing straight forward into a room. And then Wang Chi flies over, and then the storm flies over, and then you just see like a bunch of furniture go flying the other way. Like, I think they could have done a lot with that. That scene is just absolutely perfect to me. I laugh my ass off in that scene. It's so
that
funny.
Scene is 100% like silent movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Or Scooby-Doo.
Absolutely. Yep. Or Scooby-Doo.
Or Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
And then his explosion, the explosion of thunder. Oh my God. So good. Just the like smoke coming out of the nose. It was essentially a cartoon. It was 100% a cartoon. Yeah, that's spot on. So I could see it being more of that, more slapstick, more, you know, kung fu at heart, but funny in its execution. So I think we've landed on the fact that if you saw it as a kid, you loved it. If you didn't see it as a kid, ups and downsies. That's fair. I think that's perfectly fair. I want to take just a couple minutes to talk through the special effects on this. Mark, why don't you talk about the visual effects first, and then I want to talk about the kung fu a little bit as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to land on the opposite side of Andy, where I thought the effects in this one were pretty good. For an era of film where there was a bunch of new effects that were still getting the, you know, the wrinkles ironed out, I think this one pulled it off well. We have the good stuff of Lopan gliding along the floor, and you know, that one's pretty easy practical effect, but then, you know, he happens to float through walls and stuff. And sometimes when we get effects like that in this era of film, you can really tell that the quality of one layer of film is not the same as in the other layer of film. I actually think Ghostbusters suffers from that, and I don't think this one did. So I was pretty impressed.
Interesting note, the same company did both.
And also Ghostbusters was a year before. Movie. Or yep. 2 years before?
Nice.
I believe that whatever the special effects company that did Ghostbusters was created to make Ghostbusters. I could be wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right. I watched the, what's that series? Movies That You Love. Gosh, what is it on Netflix? I can't think of the name of it. But yes, that's exactly right. One of the heads of ILM left and started their own company and basically handled all the effects on it. Yes, that is exactly right.
Yep, that's right.
I want to talk a little bit about the kung fu. It was pretty awesome. I think the stunt work was pretty great, especially with the storms. I just thought that was great. Yeah. I mean, whoever they hired to do the choreography and everything was solid. You know, I think there were a couple moments where background actors in some of the fights were just sort of just slapping each other's hands a little bit. But other than that, I thought all in all, it was really, really good. I enjoyed that a lot.
I'd like to tack on to the fighting aspect of this with a slightly different point. Do we think this movie needs a boss fight? Because, I mean, we have the three storms. There's a lot of great fighting with them. It's fantastic. Lopan doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Could this movie benefit if, you know, now that we have the, you know, the technology to do this, if we could make Lopan a more, I don't know, imposing and dangerous character?
I have a suggestion. Perhaps a boss fight would be appropriate, but I would also suggest that they tighten up the story in terms of the villains. Because like you said, Mark, you had Lopan, who was just kind of creepy. Then you had the storms, which were, I was confused by the storms at first because while I liked their straw hats, I thought those were cool. They made a lot of moves and a lot of like showy stuff, but they didn't always do a lot. And then they were like kidnapping people, I guess. And then there was that weird Chewbacca guy that I don't
Beast
understand
Man.
Why, like, or Beast Man, like, I don't understand why he was there. Like, yeah, I truly too. Don't know why he, like, all of a sudden, whoa, there's Beast Man. And then,
yeah.
And then there was the weird, Beholder thing,
mm-hmm.
But all these like things that keep getting added on. And I really was confused about who I needed to be paying attention to. And it just made the story, the plot to me was lost. So that would be one suggestion that I would make. Would be to tighten that up and then perhaps a better boss fight.
This movie really does in a lot of ways feel like it follows a video game structure, yeah. Where they're going down different levels, like literally down this elevator to like the next level down till they get to the sort of mini boss fight where they're fighting the three storms. And whether it's the fault of John Carpenter's attempt to keep Jack Burton from being the heroic hero, or if it was just, if it made more sense in some other narrative way. But the only real boss fight with Lo Pan was when Egg Shen and him played their little video game, video game combat, which was interesting and cool, but also took less than a minute and then it was over and nothing really happened because of it. And then Lo Pan just, you know, left. You couldn't ever beat me. And then he left. And to the point, Mark, that you're making, I think one of the problems in the original movie with why there wasn't a boss fight is because in order to make James Hong look 7 feet tall, he was on really, really tall lifts and could barely walk.
Yeah.
So making him do any sort of physical combat was pretty much impossible. But that, I think that in a remake, that would make a lot more sense to have him do something besides, video game fighting or whatever that was.
I think we're really missing what is actually needed, which is in the fight, the video game fight that you mentioned, we just have to make it so that Lo Pan doesn't use his pinkies as the source of his power, because really that's no good. Like everybody knows that pinky is the weakest digit. Like the fact that he just kind of puts his pinkies together and then has like a 10-foot wide lightsaber. Like it's not realistic. I'm sorry. It's just not realistic.
That's how I mime. I'm going to go play video games as I put my pinkies together and move my thumbs.
It's so dumb. Oh, Lordy. Oh, so dumb. I love it.
But James Hong's the best.
James Hong is totally the best. Yes. Agreed. All right. So let's wrap it up here with our rating of the film. Again, this is a 1 to 10 scale, 1 being the worst movie you've ever seen, 10 being the best movie you've ever seen, and a scale of your choosing. So, Jer, since this is your pick, why don't you start us off?
So I will admit that this is not a flawless movie, and much of my rating is buoyed by the nostalgia that goes along with it. So that being said, I still, even watching it a couple weeks ago to refresh for this podcast, and I have seen it in my adult life before. It wasn't like I hadn't seen it in 20 years, but every time I watch it, I still enjoy it. So I'm going to give this one 8.36 demon bags.
Nice.
That is way too many 6 demon bags for any one person to have, but there was a pretty big group of them.
Alas, what can you do? Lee, on to you. What is your rating and scale?
Yeah, well, like I said, this wasn't really for me. So I'll give it 4 green eyes.
Creepy. Andy, on to you. What about you? Rating and scale for you.
I'm right there with Lee. I'm also going to give this one 4 beast men.
Nice. Andy, I very much did enjoy your introduction to Gracie Law. 1, because of the olden times mention, which just killed me. And then you ended it with, what was it? And then she gets grabbed by beast man.
Yeah.
Boom. Just straight up. I love it. So good. I'll go next. I'm going to give. So I love this movie. It is not a good movie. It's not a great movie. I love this movie. It's so much fun. I still enjoy it. And yes, there's absolutely childhood weight in that. I will give it 7.1 steaming noses, because that the blowing up guy is just my that was like the thing that I remembered most from this movie, is his like growing. And I love that effect. That effect was top notch. So good. So good. All right, Mark, wrap us up here.
All right. This movie is totally for me. And yes, there's some nostalgia value as well, although I have come back to it in my adult life and didn't find it as flawed as other people have. I think it has original characters. I think it has original writing. And its imperfections don't make it suffer that much, in my opinion. I'm going to give it 9.7 not beholders.
Whoa. That's big.
Bang.
Yes. Yes.
Nice.
Canceling out me and Lee.
That's awesome. That's good. Man, this was fun. Jer, good pick. Thank you for making this choice. I was very happy to revisit it, and this was a fun discussion. Nice work.
Yeah, I'm surprised by the reactions, but I appreciate them. And this was great. And I am actually very happy that Andy and Lee felt comfortable expressing their counterpoints.
Yeah, they're not wrong.
We've done this long enough.
you're not wrong per se. But yeah.
And I've never actually seen David Lynch's Dune, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, how many? I think, am I the only? No, Jerry, you've seen it, right?
I have seen. So I was going to bring this up about Big Trouble in Little China 2, but I think Dune totally fits into this category as well. Big Trouble in Little China, I saw so much, number one, because of that VHS cash that my stepdad gave us, but also it felt like this was like on that TBS or TNT, like, where they're just showing movies constantly. And so you're just watching sort of the TNT edited version of it. And the steam coming out of the nose and Jack Burton wheeling backwards down the hallway in the wheelchair were sort of the bumpers into and out of the commercials. So I remember seeing those two scenes a billion times. And Dune, similarly, was also one of those movies that was seemingly always on USA or TNT or something. And so I feel like I've seen chunks of it, but I don't think I've ever seen it from beginning to end.
Got it. Andy, have you seen Dune?
No, I just said that I had.
Thank
not.
You. That's what I thought.
Thanks for paying attention.
What? Lee, have you seen Dune?
No. And I've avoided it on purpose.
I'm so excited for this. Mark, have you seen Dune?
I have seen parts of it, and I think it might be a similar situation to Jer, where it's been around, and I caught it for a little bit, but then maybe I got called upstairs to eat dinner. I don't know, something like that.
Got it. Okay.
Also, I think there are probably parts of Dune that are in my head as parts of Dune, but are actually part of the movie Ice Pirates, which is very, very different.
Yes.
And one that I've desperately wanted to add to this podcast, but I'm going to hold off onto it for a while now because I don't want to subject you guys to that.
That's so awesome, man. Well, I'm excited for that. I can't wait. Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Google Play and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. And we're on YouTube now as well. We're on Facebook at Remakers Mark, Twitter at Remakers Mark, and Instagram at Remakers Mark Podcast. So please join in the discussion there as well. Well, that was really fun. I'm glad we went on this journey together, and I cannot wait for the next journey as well. Man, this is a trip. Until the next time, gentlemen, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Turns out Andy's microphone hasn't been working this entire time.
You guys haven't heard me?
I've been speaking for 40 minutes straight.
It was gold, I tell you, pure gold.